You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Axe to Grind, the hardcore podcast. I'm Patrick.
I'm Bob.
I'm Tom, and I'm Weirded Out.
And it's hundreds of episodes, fellas. You got to mix it up.
Hundreds. Everybody, thank you for joining us. Subscribe to our Patreon for excellent content. Knox Colby is the subject of the recent Patrick Artist to Artist series. And Knox's comment on it, it's just that real artist to artist shit. You just get a deep connection. Hold on, let me read it directly from my group chat with him. Hold on, where you at, Knoxy? God, shout out to Knox. Shout out to Enforce. They deserve more love than they get. This is worth it. Oh God, I couldn't make it through my own episode. It's so boring. Ha ha ha.
So, yeah, welcome to my life. That's all I do is just talk. You know what I mean? He's telling me he's got to get used to it.
These stories so boring, but here's mine. So, with that said, everybody, let's thank some sponsors. Thank you to Run for Cover Records.
Sony.
Thank you to...
What?
To Live a Lie.
Canon.
I like the way you're going. Thank you to Closed Casket Activities.
Nikon.
I'm hoping you hit the one I'm telepathically trying to shoot to you right now. And thank you to Convulse Records.
Leica.
I was going for Panasonic. Yeah. Were you just doing camera brands?
I was doing camera brands. Yeah,
it's okay. Listen, once you did Nikon, I was figured. But I was hoping you started with Sony. And I was like, ooh, we could get some weird shit here.
You can go anywhere. JVC.
Whenever I travel, Southeast Asia, they love JBL. Everything is somebody trying to sell me a JBL product of some type. And I just don't know what the fixation is. They're fine quality, I guess, speakers. Okay, thanks.
Old tech. Today we're starting with our friends, Closed Casket Activities. I'm going to tell you to go to closedcasketactivities.com for all your heavy music needs. But you know what? Today, specifically, we're changing it up. We're going to tell you to go to jarheadfertilizer.com. Do you know why, guys?
No.
Do you know why? They have a new LPCD coming out, Carceral Warfare.
Yeah.
And it's coming out very soon, December 8th. The lead video and single, Parasitic Pathology, is out right now. Dropped just last night at midnight. If you go to jarheadfertilizer.com, you can get that limited vinyl. Maybe it's on closedcasketactivities.com too, but it'll definitely be there. So go get it. Closedcasketactivities.com, jarheadfertilizer.com. This is that heavy stuff. They got a big tour coming up. You're going to want to check this out. I think if you're a fan of some of the other stuff that Closed Casket's been doing recently, noisy, heavy, fast, this is it. Do it. Convulse Records, convulserecords.com. Guys, they did a pretty hot merch drop not long ago that I was a fan of, and I'm excited. I'm actually, we're going to do a merch draft right now. Are you guys ready? Tom, you get the first pick in the Convulse Records merch draft of the recent drop. So it's these five items first here.
All right, let me pull up the old website.
Yeah, go to convulserecords.com. And then...
Man.
So you get the first pick.
Do I go... chalk, or do I go, hey, that's weird that Tom's wearing something like that,
like a high ceiling pick, like, oh, this could be a real hit, or, you know, it's a little tricky. It's up to you, brother.
I'm gonna go chalk. I love the varsity hoodie.
Hell yeah. Black varsity hoodie, classic look. Love the kind of varsity letters, but then you still get that cool, like, fritzled Convulse Records Skull. Yeah, exactly. Shout out Established 2018. Patrick, you get the second pick. Obviously, the hoodie's off the map, but which of these four items is striking your fancy in the draft?
Hold on.
He's also going to convulserecords.com slower than Tom, but, you know, he'll get there.
Yeah, hold on.
Hold on.
Yeah, Pat, do you have to go to anything like .au?
Yeah, I do, actually.
That's so fantastic.
Not everything, obviously. Okay, so I'm looking at the merch on top, right?
Yes, thing.
Hoodie's gone. Mentioned. Hoodie's off the top. So
I'm going with the money burner. Come on.
What? Is that you to all your labels?
Yeah.
Oh, the money burner shirt. Okay, fantastic pick. Yes. Yes, very good. Yeah, the money burner shirt, a weird goblin burning some money, and that does feel strangely appropriate for you. And that leaves my number one pick, the Convulse Records logo hat, floppy dad hat. That's my style with the classic Convulse Records logo. I might have already ordered this. If you haven't, you should too. ConvulseRecords.com. Check it out. Thank you for all the support. If you love us or you like us or you kind of like us or you just play us in the background to get through whatever nonsense you're doing, appreciate you. Go support these labels. You'll find something you like. How you doing? How you feeling, fellas?
Excellent.
Doing all right. How you doing?
I'm good. Tom, it was posed to me that the term, the phrase fellas, is this a uniquely upstate New York term? Is this a term that you hear a lot in your life? Or is this just a term that you hear Patrick say? Because when it was posed to me, it was said, hey, is fellas just something they say in upstate New York? Is that just a Patrick thing? And I said, I think it's a New York thing. Yeah, right? Just overall.
I mean, I think it might be an Irish thing because, like, you know, for he's a jolly good fella.
Oh, okay, I don't know. Sure.
It's
not fellow, it's fella.
Yeah, fella. Is it not common? Am I the only – I can't be the only one saying fella.
No, but I mean, think about it. Like, your friends across the country, do they go like, oh, how you fellas doing?
No. I will admit that it's more common coming out of my mouth. But there are regional shits. Like, saying boss is definitely – I encounter that in the South more than I encounter it anywhere in the Northeast.
That's true. You know what I mean? That's true.
Right. You say pal in Boston, that means you want to fight, but you say pal somewhere else, it's like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. A little less confrontational.
Like, how you doing, pal? And like, oh, he's going to punch me.
Yeah. My father says pal in the most congenial way. It's his fella.
Pal is a, you think your father comes off like a gym teacher or a friendly coach. Like, what's up, pal? How you doing? Like, right. Like kind of, you know, maybe gives you a little noogie kind of thing. What's up, fellas? Feels like a very New York people I know thing to say. So it's not just Patrick, but that did come up recently. No, I'm doing well. The real life hammer of justice is a weird thing. The things that strike you sideways, you know. About an hour ago, I got a message from the daycare that we used when we moved here with Easton. It's like a daycare preschool kind of thing. And one of my daughters goes there now. And the owner just sold it. And it, like, literally, not tailspin, but I was like shook because this is this woman I've known for years. And like, I think she runs an incredible business. Love everything she does. Man, I got that email. I texted Amanda was in the other room putting kids to bed. And I texted her. I'm like, you know, blank sold the daycare. And she was like, yeah, okay. But it really hit me sideways. I was like, oh man. So if I'm seem off, it's because I've had a major ripple in the daily life over here. Woo. But do you guys feel like talking about some hardcore tonight?
Love to.
Sure.
let me posit a question first.
Is this the one you were going to drop on us?
No, this is a different one inspired by our ad reads. All right.
We're going to talk about cameras?
Actually,
inspired. And then I got a question for you guys. I got a question for you after this one.
Inspired by our own ad read for our own Patreon. My conversation with Knox was really fun. He's a wonderful dude. Very fun guy to speak to.
Yeah. I wonder where he gets his ideas from.
The Here's my question. And this is not, this isn't me coaching. What do they call it when you're coaching from the, through the media? That's not what I'm doing here. I'm just trying to think out loud because in all my social circles, including our group chat, I've asked this question. Drug Church has a headliner in the fall of next year, right? Yeah. It's our album, you know, our new album sort of shit, right? And finding support for that tour is a brain buster, right? Because you want it to be high energy throughout, but you also want a little bit of variety. We play, you know, different types of songs, and so we can have different types of bands. Not that they would necessarily do it anyway. It's a hypothetical. But is something like Enforced too much?
No, it. No, but
it's dope.
It would be dope. It would be an experiment of extracurricular genre play for them, because they have because mostly. They and I'm speaking very either. Coldly. I'm speaking very clinically here about a band I love, I think is awesome, and I think is doing so many things the right way. And I'm not saying they're doing things the wrong way. Like, they've created quite a foothold in the metal, thrash, et cetera world, and have worked really hard to do it. So I think it's sick what they've done. But to do a tour with Drug Church could be seen as like, oh, why are you doing that?
Right.
By their fans who are, you know, metal and kind of not adjacent to hardcore, you know, like just like, wait a second. Like, yeah, you got a little hardcore in your sound, but like, you're like a thrash metal band, you know, you're a metal band, you know?
And right. Imagine like Anthrax going out with like U2 or something.
Anthrax going out with Bad Religion, right? You know what I mean? Like right. In 1986, there see, might be some early
through a 2023 lens makes total sense to me.
Agree, but then you look at the more myopic view of it and see like what somebody who's just in the metal world, they might see it as like, what are you trying to go for? You're trying to get those like pop punk fans? What are you doing? You know? Now that said, I think it's incredible. This is like, I don't know if it's a symptom or like a cause of the time, is how open the broad-based listener is to things, because I think if Enforce goes on a tour with Drug Church, a lot of Drug Church fans go home fans of Enforced.
Yes.
Because they just bring a lot of energy. They're great. It's got an appeal. And I think, and this is me speaking broadly, but also hearing, knowing a lot of different types of people who really love Drug Church. Drug Church is not a fan base who's on that Slayer fan tip, on that AFI fan tip, where it's like, no, I'm here to see that band and I don't want to see the openers. I'm not interested. I'm not curious right. What they sound like. So
your people like music.
Yeah. That's right. I would hope. I mean, also like just, yeah, that sort of vibe that I'm here for the show, which is, I'm grateful for that. I'm trying to think like, you know, I'm throwing names out like something like Spy, but it's with Spy and Enforced, it's very difficult. Everybody, this is, again, I'm not coaching from the bench. If there's a conversation to be had with any of these bands, I'll just go to them. But I'm just, these are hypotheticals. Okay.
Fine. You're using references of bands that you enjoy and would be like excited to have on tour with you. Yes. This is just clinical. Yeah.
And finding, sorry, everybody. And also these might be like, what do you call them? Limousine problems or something. You know what I mean? Like not that Drug Church is in a limousine, sure. just that this might not apply for everybody. Being a headlining band, trying to find an act that is willing to play under you, but is also has a lot of energy around them. If I was Enforced, do I play under Drug Church? Technically we might be a bigger band, but that doesn't mean that they necessarily benefit from playing under us. And Spy is another good example.
Right. And it makes them look bad on like a flyer. If you don't know who Drug Church is, but you know, Enforced, cause you saw them with like Obituary.
Right. Well, I don't even worry about that. And I don't know if I don't know how many other bands do. What I do worry about for my band and other bands on occasion is, am I wasting your time? Do you know what I mean? Like, am I wasting your time by asking you to play in front of people who may, because we get offers where they're cool. They're very cool people. They're very cool bands. They're very cool, whatever. And I just have to look at it and go, yeah, I just don't know if I can, like, I have a career. I can go do music stuff that is exclusively fun. I don't know if I can ask my bandmates to go spend 30 days on a pointless venture.
just do it for the fun thing. Right. Sure.
Right. Like, so,
I mean,
like,
that's not your concern. That's their concern to figure out.
Yeah.
Not your band. I'm saying the bands that you ask.
Well, yes. And that's the other thing, is that you're absolutely right.
That's right. That's right.
It's
up, they have their own agency.
It's up to every band to make the decision if they think it's worthwhile or not. And it's, yes, you're all correct on that. I don't know. It's the thing that enters my head whenever we talk about support. Like, in my opinion, a band like Spy would get a lot out of playing with Drug Church. But 100%. But that also really depends on a band like Spy's goals. Do you know what I'm saying? It's not everybody's goal is to have a few fans from this scene and a few fans from that scene.
That's
some
right.
Some bands are just interested in being the most concentrated version of what they are and kind of dominating their space forever. Iron Lung is not interested in opening for AFI. So it's like, I don't know. I just right now I get very stressed out around the time that we have to start selecting, support bands, because I want the best outcome. I don't have any great suggestions because I'm also on an island.
Do you think you get too involved?
I don't get terribly involved until it's too late. And then I just, chime in that I'm dissatisfied.
And here's my other question.
Yes.
I'm going to interrogate you now.
Yeah, please.
Knowing you and the stuff that you've gotten killed for the last like 6 months. Mm. Are you limiting the potential support potential because you're limiting the venues to ensure no barricades, etc.? Could you do like a fuck? Like, if you were willing to fucking eat shit in New York and play a fucking Brooklyn Steel with
okay, so
whoever fucking Built a Spill or something, whoever, like it could be anybody.
Okay, so it's a real. Sorry, everybody. This is going to be a real behind the curtain, inside baseball sort of episode. It's a hard question because you don't know until you succeed or fail at a new size room, right? And our booking agents are applying soft pressure to get us to go into bigger rooms. Yeah. Everybody from Fiddlehead to Drain, everybody's kind of experiencing a really nice progressive move towards these larger venues. And, obviously if you are somebody affiliated with Drug Church and your money is based on our money, then obviously you would like us to be in bigger rooms. It's totally natural. It's not an evil thing on anybody's part. I am being very stinky about room size at this point, because I want barrier, or I want no barrier.
No,
I
barrier
to be an issue.
I don't want people touching me. I want a barrier. I don't care if it's a 200 cap. I want a giant bat.
I mean, listen, there's definitely bands like that out there, but I guess what I'm saying is, the smaller the room, the more limited your support options, because you simply cannot justify the expense.
Can't afford it.
Because
look at this, Drug Church, Sam I Am.
Listen, that's the thing.
Would be a fucking banger.
But
you're not doing that at the place you're doing usual shows.
No, but all right, Tom. Let's hypothetical this, and Bob, you've booked a million shows, including festivals.
Sure. I'm listening.
So I'm gonna need your.
Yeah. You know more than the rest of the
us. Yeah, I'm gonna need your insight.
No, it's just different perspective. I'm here.
So, Sam, I am. Tom, we can, we're both fans of the band. I have not seen them. And just tell me what size room you think they would fill on their own in 2023.
If it's played in New York City, you could probably do 4.
What?
Is that too little?
Could probably do what?
Probably 400.
Oh, no, that's fine.
No, they not four people.
No,
I don't mind.
Yeah.
I think they last played here. They played Brooklyn Made.
Okay, so
which is that new spot and like that has its own. You if you play there, you get access to an apartment upstairs that has a jacuzzi. But whatever.
Oh, shit.
So if you want to talk to your peoples, that's where I saw the Good Life tour too. So I'm just saying.
You know what? There's a couple venues in North America that have jacuzzis, and I have no interest in going in none of them.
But I mean, they're just a festering whirlpool of just everything.
It's disgusting. So, okay. So they bring 400. What do you think Drug Church is good for? It's 8. Tough to guess because in New Brooklyn. York we do well. Plus we've been, pretty protected on our last few New York, trips. We've had, either great support or been great support. So it is really difficult to tell. Are we good for 500?
I was saying more than that.
Yeah, so that's the issue. I think we're good.
Okay, for you guys together sell out Monarch.
Okay.
Easy.
Yeah, all right, that's true. Okay, so the two of us sell out Monarch. That's completely viable. Sounds like the best time in the world to me. I really like Monarch. But to get Sam I Am to say, yeah, this is worth it for us, it might have to be a bigger room with a bigger guarantee that we then don't fill. And that is to me, unacceptable.
I would rather
fill a room, have a great time, kids wall to wall, good memories, a lot of sweat, nobody getting significantly hurt because there's not enough physical room in the building to get significantly
correct
hurt.
Energy.
Yep.
So Pat, what were your last two headliners? Do you remember the lineups?
We did a co-headline with the band Prince Daddy. Was Anxious on that, or did I make that up?
No, Anxious was on that.
Yeah, they were on that.
And what was
our... I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm just wondering, like, because if you look back, you did a Soul Blind, One Step Closer.
Oh, right. Yeah. That was well, too.
Who was the fourth band? Was that Gel? No.
No.
Gel was on the Drain Tour.
Yeah.
Who was the fourth band? I'm really sorry to put you on the...
No, you had a wonderful time on it. Forgive me to the bands. I tore a lot this past year.
Yeah. Anyways, that was the bulk of it. Yeah.
Good tours, right?
But, Lurk.
Yes, Lurk. So here's the thing. Drain and Prince Daddy. Prince Daddy has a lot of their own fans. We felt totally protected in those shows. Solid co-headliner. It would have had to go bad, really bad for it to go bad. Drain. We were support. Can't be more protected than that. They were having a great fucking like a meteoric moment. Awesome, fun to be part of it. And then in New York, ultra protected on the
Angel Dust
Fiddlehead. Angel Dust Fiddlehead. And
you closed that one.
We did close that one, but anybody could close that one.
But you also went on at like midnight.
Sure. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you gassing me up, but my point.
I'm just saying. No, but I remember like the show got pushed back because it was taking forever to get people in the venue, and our other friend Pat was like, "We're not playing right now. There's 600 people outside in line or whatever the fuck it was." And yeah, you guys got pushed back. I remember sitting there. It was like midnight on like a weekday because I think we got like a Thursday because New York always gets the like they'll come out whenever.
Yep.
And not a soul left.
Yeah, it was awesome. Very cool. And I think that unless the tide really turns, our next LP outing is going to be really good. But I still would prefer to safely fill a room. And now here's the question. We've talked about this a little bit on this podcast, and forgive us for people that don't like the nitty-gritty stuff. Let me put it like this. A friend of mine just went out. He played the same rooms that he's played for the last 2 years. He was bummed. Not because the shows weren't good, just because it's too samey. life's becoming too familiar, too similar.
Mm.
Is it? And he also, in the back of his head, feels that he's starting to get judged. That, and this is real, by the way, everybody. That you can kind of punk yourself into poverty. To me, it's not a stance. I'm not taking some fucking hardcore for the hardcore stance by wanting small rooms with no barrier. It's purely for my enjoyment. You know what I mean? So, am I doing myself a disservice and for lack of a better word or lack of a better phrase and forgive me, to the basement kids here, am I, harming my future earnings? Am I ruining my potential of being Screeching Weasel?
I hope so. Yes.
by not going up a room when I have the opportunity, because as Tom and I have gone on and on about, Sick of It All walked through a door when the door opened, and as a result, their career was lengthened far beyond.
Right. It gives you a lot of room to fall.
Yeah. It gives you a lot of room to fall. And it was lengthened far beyond that of many of their contemporaries. So do you walk through that room when you have an opportunity? Like when you tell me Sam I Am is a 400 cap in 2023, should Sam I Am be a bigger band?
Yes,
they probably should. Right. And what contributes to the fact that they're not a 1,000 cap band. There's probably a lot of things, but one of those might just be, well, they were a 1,000 cap band at their peak or a 1,500 cap band at their peak, and this is what happens after 20 years. So
right, and they haven't played in front of new people in 20 years.
Yeah, there you go. That's true.
That's the problem.
But this is all to say,
I'm not for them, but in general, I think these bands get into their lanes. And, and that's cool too. Maybe they're just stoked to play in front of 400 people that they play in front of and get the guarantee that they get. And that's it. Maybe they're not looking for anything else. And that's cool too, man. There's no harm in that.
Yeah. Very cool. But I don't know. I know that in the next few months, as we try to pin down support and probably venues, on the other side of the winter, I know that I'm going to be put in, I'm going to be the villain. I anticipate this already. Mm. So, and listen, the people who are critical of where I'm at, they might ultimately be right. And maybe I'm just stuck on an island. Let me run a question by you fellas. Maybe I've asked this before. Do you know who Mama is?
I watched that movie.
Good Times. What?
So Mama is a band. And my bandmates fucking love Mama. And they tell me Mama's bigger than we are. And they want to tour with Mama, but there's no way to figure it out because they're not incentivized to do a co-headline, we don't think. And they're slightly too big to play under us. We're slightly too big perhaps to play under them. And here,
how do you spell it?
I think just like you'd think, with an O maybe.
Oh, Mama, M-O-M-M-A.
But here's why I bring up this band, because respectfully to Mama, this has nothing to do with Mama's reach or anything. I never heard of Mama, and I am on an island, right, that I fully recognize because my bandmates are saying, let's get this band or let's get that band. And to me, they sound respectfully to Turnover. They sound like Turnover, like some of these bands that these fellas are suggesting. And I say, hey, that's cool, but I need people to stage dive all day. That's just what I need. And
right, that's part of the show here.
Here's what I'm arriving at is I'm on an island, both in terms of my what comes over my desk in terms of new music, and also what I want out of a show. But I'm one of five people, and I fully acknowledge that I've been wrong in the past and I don't know everything. So the really hard part is when you're talking about something like an album record, like a record release tour, Everybody wants that to be ideal. Everybody wants that to be like their vision of how it should pan out. And I'm anticipating conflict. So, that's where I'm at. I see the conch to you fellas.
Okay. So you're anticipating conflict because
I want to play with Spy and
yeah,
Joe.
you want the stage dives and you see the band. Okay, so this is a fun topic. Okay. So this is the story of Minor Threat prior to Out of Step. Their heads were in different directions, you know.
I'm worried.
That's right. Right. So this is a fun question. Tom, you might have some practical experience, but it's a fun one to think about. What to do when a partnership, an endeavor, doesn't hit? It's not a snag. It's not a problem. It hits a, you want to do AB and I want to do EF. Where do we go from here? Do you find a compromise in the middle? Does that just mean does that mean everyone's unhappy? Do you do a little A and a little E? You know, like what is the right mix? And is there a CD? Is there a middle ground where it's like, we're booking this tour. We've got room for the chill out, great listening band and the stomp them up, dive off the stage band. And that's,
which is kind of a problem for Drug Church.
Yeah.
Because they fit in both lanes.
Well, and then it's what is the Drug Church set like? And is anyone happy with it? This is a weird one, and it will sidebar it for now. Let's put a pin in what the Alkaline Trio set is going to be like. But that's the interesting part. Is it practical? Is it? And I think it's where it gets down to the specific bands you go out with. Will they work or will they not work? You know, like if you're going out with two bands that are different flavors, but highly competent and you think there's tracks on either side of the fence, maybe it'll work. But if you're bringing one just because they're off the wall bonkers jumping off things and the other is just chill vibes, dude, it could leave you as a band who has to play last with a like, okay, let's get everybody back engaged with the gig, right? And that's a weird feeling. So my answer is you have to thread the needle in the most thoughtful of ways to hit. Mm. And the good side in that is if people on both sides like both things, you can really make it work. If you can see the value, especially, look, all three of us will admit this and say this to the audience. There are bands that on record are just okay. Maybe they could be described as drab or boring or flat or melancholic, or you need to be in the right mood. But then when you see it live, wow, it's impressive and livelier than you maybe thought and more exciting. And there are bands who on record are awesome and loud and you're like, this is angry and fueled. And then you see them live and it's boring. You can't have that. So this can go either way. It's not always about like we want to take the exciting band and the chill band. How do we make it work? It's about getting the good version of all those things. Ain't easy.
And who knows what changes in the next 6 months?
Oh yeah, there's one.
And maybe band, a new band. You're like, that's the shit.
Yeah, and it's also there's one band that my bandmates really like to take out, who are probably going to be bigger than us, but like if we lock them in now, we might be in a situation where we have to co-headline by the time it comes around, you know.
Honestly, not a bad situation there.
No, it's not bad, except I mean, it's great for the amount of people at the shows, and it's all good. I would just need to know that they also have an album coming out, because if you both have albums coming out, then you can kind of get away with a like, oh, it's a co-headline because we're bros. But if you, if one of you has an album coming out and you're at your kind of like peak excitement levels, people are like, are about you, and then you're doing a co-headline with somebody that put out an album a year ago, it's just evident that you are not nearly as big as that band. You know what I mean? Which is not really a problem. Like, for example, there's bands that are just, they're going to have higher Spotify numbers than my band no matter what. And it's just, there's going to have to be some parsing between tickets and like what, you know, what matters in this calculation. I don't know. I don't know if our listeners are super interested in specifically Drug Church business, but this applies to basically everybody.
Every tour you see gets announced, there's talks like this for 6 months.
Yeah, precisely right. Also, have you guys checked out Strange Joy?
Yes, good band.
So my bandmates, it was in the group chat, somebody suggested as a one of four. So I went and checked it out live. I'd heard the record, I think, but live is really fun. Like, mm-hmm. Really, really good band live. So one of fours are easier because if you can find bands that are serious about, hey, we're at the beginning of our career, or we're less known, but we are a serious act, we'd like to go out. Cool. That's a little bit easier. Two of four can be difficult because they often don't understand why they're not three of four, because, hey, we've got similar numbers to three of four, or
right. It's negligible.
Yeah. Or we think we'll have a record coming out around that time, and we think that we'll skip over three of four, not to be disrespectful, but you know, can we consider that? And there's all sorts of things, but, three of four is goddamn hard, man. It's because you don't want to insult.
Just thread the needle.
You don't want to insult anybody. You want to be respectful to their time and their money. It's not easy.
And you don't want to get smoked.
And then you can also run into a problem. We haven't run into this problem yet, but I've seen it play out a lot, where three of four keeps asking for more money because they're doing the math in their head and they're saying, do we really need to be a support band? We'll only do it if we get X, right? And sometimes if you've put together an entire tour, you can then feel like these guys have you over the barrel because they'd be perfect. You know what I mean? So I don't know. These are all group chat fights that will take place.
Well, I would encourage the idea being the thing that you and people, you know, a lot of times people, this is someone's first episode. If you enjoy this, we had a lot of really good convo about the Drain Tour,
yeah,
where there was back scenes like, ooh, is Drug Church opening for Drain sort of an underplay for you? And you guys all collectively like, well, who knows? I don't know. Maybe. Who cares? We're going to go out and these shows are going to be great. And you look at that and you look back at that and you look at where Drain's at now, where Drug Church is at now, where Gel is at now. Magnitude continues to do stuff. They just dropped their new record, you know? And it's just like, and all the other bands that were on different legs of that, yo, a lot of ships are floating off that wave.
Oh yeah.
And so that's where I apply that into the booking agent head, into the head of the band looking at that like, ooh, we're getting asked to do a tour package. What does that mean? You know, a lot of first timers, it's interesting. It can be really good. It could be weird. It could be foreign. It can be a really good opportunity to do that second of four or third of, you know what I mean? The second slot. The first slot can be a good opportunity too, especially depending on what kind of band you are. So I don't know. I think you are in somewhat of a privileged position in terms of you have an audience who is open, which means they're receptive, which means the bands you can bring will do well. And that's not a case for a lot of bands. You could bring a heavier band out and they could do well. You could bring a mellow band out and they could do well. You can't say that for every band in the spaces that we talk about often. So shout out to that. I think it's an interesting conversation, and maybe we can kind of stay abreast to it, and you can let us know how much your bandmates like this being just public fodder.
Are you ready for another topic? Vaguely
of
related.
Of course. Swing it.
Oh, related.
How much should a hardcore show cost in 2024?
Like, what are we talking? Local? Are we talking big?
We're talking, let's say on the, okay, let's go down the list. Tsunami's playing six shows. What should those shows cost?
I'd say $25 before fees.
Okay.
What do you think?
I'm going to be honest. I'm completely disconnected. I'm a G. I get into everything for free. I don't know what things even cost.
Here, hold on, Patrick. Wait a second. 1998, time where you paid for most shows you got into, right?
Yeah, all of them.
Okay. How much would the Tsunami show, do you think, cost in 1998?
In Albany, New York, $10.
1998? I'm saying it's $8.
Yeah,
maybe
$8. Yeah,
let's call it $10. Nice and easy. It's Tsunami and some other good bands. Tsunami's from California. We're throwing the extra $2. $10 in 1998 equates to $18.40 in 2023, and we're rounding that up to 20.
Okay.
Full stop. So I'm saying bare minimum 20. I think 20 to 25 is where we're at, because the economics of shows have changed too.
Okay, but what's the tip?
People ain't selling CDs out here now. No, you know what I mean?
Yeah, hey, I'm the guy who thinks, I am not against money. So that's all fine. But what
Punk Rock Guilt is dead.
What's that?
Punk Rock Guilt is dead.
Punk Rock Guilt is dead. I agree with that. But what about, let's say, a band that I think kind of has done their own headliner, unless I'm mistaken, but not a big band. The band Spaced. Let's say that Spaced and another band that is smaller than Spaced are doing a completely DIY, the 15-day tour. What do those shows cost? Are those 20? We have a baseline of 20 no matter what?
I'd say like 18 to 20.
Okay. And is there a, what is the, so in pricing, sorry, everybody, this is now no, this super is inside baseball. In pricing, and Bob, you could speak to this with the first few Sound and Furies versus the current Sound and Furies and exactly what those differences are. There is a tipping point in the cost of things where what you're losing hey, I can't afford that, is not, so you're not at the tipping point. You can have people in mass say, I'm not willing to pay that. And it's totally fine for most businesses if they raise the prices, provided that they're still making more money. And you see this, like for example, comic books, a business I'm in, have a smaller readership, but they charge more money. It's a luxury item. And they, for a while there, they were making the same amount of money. They're no longer. That's the problem. It tends to be diminishing returns after a time. But you can lose some people because by charging more, this is obvious, everybody. It's economics, but just pay attention.
It peels people off.
You can. That's the thing. You can offset costs, but you're making people angry.
But not everybody. A certain age group you're making angry.
Yes, that's all true. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's get to it. What is the tipping point on a touring band, but primarily what we'd call like a local show, a smaller show? What's the tipping point number? Is it anything over 20 tipping point?
Probably.
And what is it on a national act that can fill a good size room?
I mean, I paid $54 to see Quicksand last night.
That's right. Yeah. And I think I think that
there's also just fees involved and shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that people are looking at the way they spend their money on music and bands differently now, whether they're conscious of it or not, because it's like, oh, well, I don't buy CDs anymore. I stream my music. New albums. Yeah, right. Correct. New albums come out. Cool. Maybe I buy merch, and people have different perspectives on that, you know, like whatever. But they see it as being like, oh, there's an increase. It costs more to go see them live. Yeah, okay, sure. And I mean, for better or worse, one of the most direct ways that bands get money now is playing live. You know, like the days of there being purely recording artists who just record music and, you know, make a living off that. Small space world that just doesn't, if it ever existed, it doesn't now. You know what I mean? And I love to have a conversation with somebody who wants to talk about that. Like the idea of someone who just did music, put it out there, found some success from what, you know, but really maybe they toured for a while, but then stopped fully and still continued to release music and people followed that. That's few and far between now. Right. So I think people just know like, oh, okay. Like the dollar doesn't go as far as it used to. Things cost more. Walk into any bagel shop, sandwich place, you go into the grocery store, everything costs more, full stop. And so it's like, okay, $10.1998 is equivalent to $18 in 2023. But then the way that money works is different too, just everything surrounding it. So I don't think $25 is crazy for the big show, quote unquote. You know what I mean? Like, I'll be honest. Like, I remember 1999, there being tickets for bigger gigs that were $20. It wasn't everything, you know? Like, I remember going to festivals. Sometimes, you know, there were hardcore fests that were $50, $60, 20-something years ago, you know? So
what is the tipping point? What do we think?
What is the tipping point for someone to go, this is too much?
What's a festival tipping point? As a guy who's done festivals, what's the festival tipping point?
Yo, I mean,
for 3 days.
For 3 days, what's the most amount of money? Let's make it.
Dude, look at like let's make it a hardcore festival. Like,
hold on, I'm gonna say we're gonna use LDB, but we're gonna call it TME. Okay, so TME festival taking place in Jacksonville. What is the great lineup? Undeniably great lineup. What's the most amount of money?
For three nights, like three headliners?
Three headliners.
$200.
I'm saying between like two and 250.
Wow.
Like I wouldn't be surprised by that being a $200.
Yeah.
Thing. Here's the deal. I heard the sticker shock come out of your mouth. I get it.
I mean, yeah. Listen.
Right?
It's weird now. At the point in my life where I can afford some of the things that I couldn't when I was younger, I still $50 doesn't, you know, whatever. When you have a family, $50 is if you can only spend $50 doing something, you're like pretty excited. But
right, and when you don't pay for anything, it's fucking
yeah.
You
know, but $100 in your pocket. $200 anything. Makes me go, whoa, yeah, slow.
Yeah, but you got to think, there's bands on these festivals now. Like, we always talk about, like, someone made a shirt because Strife asked for $1,000.
Yeah, right. I remember.
In 1998. Wow. That in 2023 money is $1,800.
Yeah.
Most bands that you know of are probably getting close to $1,800, if not way more. Like, so it's like, if you want a good festival, it costs a lot of fucking money. And to find a venue that can fit X amount of thousand people, it's not, you know, it's not like you're not doing the fest like what used to be like Syracuse Fest. It's like, oh, there was like 700 people there or whatever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was like a big hardcore show now. But like, you're looking at places that it's like, you know, a small festival is 2,000 people.
I mean, like,
how much do you think that logistically costs to put on?
Some of the math on festivals is crazy to me. Like I wouldn't mess with it because I'm not that good at math. Like some of these, the way that some of these festivals do a really beautiful job of balancing the budget, when I know what every band is asking, I've never figured it out, but I'm grateful. Keep booking us, please. I'm grateful for you.
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
I mean, look, it's and it's scalable, and it's all these conversations. Like, if you want, and this is the part I want to encourage the listener who maybe is hearing these numbers and is daunted or what have you. You know, you can still book a small local show and do the math and make it easy. And you can put on a show for $10. I'm not lying. You can do it. It's just about understanding the people and the bands and this and that. And I'm also going to be really honest. Some of the best things are started with that acorn. That's how the oak grows. You know what I mean? Like, that's all this shit. Starts with the small show. It starts with the bands, you know, being willing to play for whatever money we make, minus the $200 it cost us to rent this room, goes to you guys. You know what I mean? Like, you'll always find that, and that's one of the pieces of hardcore, is that this is the way to learn how to do these things. And we're at a moment that I'd say even 6 years ago we weren't at, where it's just like these numbers have exploded beyond the range of like two or three mega bands to like 20 bands, you know, where this is there's bands who can draw 100 plus people any town they go to, 200 plus people any town they go to. You know, like a conversation with a friend the other day talking about Turnstile was like, we've never seen anything like that. We still haven't. The fact this band can go anywhere and pull thousands of people out, and then the big places a lot of thousands, is unseen. Even the conversation pivoted to Hatebreed. We're like, yo, even Hatebreed at their peak wasn't doing what Turnstile is doing in some of these small markets. Like, it's wild. So the interesting conversation is, well, does that eliminate the small thing? No. So don't get too caught up to not believe that you can do the small thing. And like, you'll hear us talk about those things too. You know, I'm laughing to myself. I don't know if we talked about the band Spaced, but I think they're from Buffalo. And then it had me thinking about that Buffalo brunch show they did years ago, you know?
Amazing.
And I think some of those folks went on stuff like Violent Way, what have you. But like, yo, you got a couple friends, you want to do a show, they got a band, you know, another band, and you guys are all willing to do it for whatever chips may come. That's the way shit starts. That's the way little scenes build. That's how you get things growing up. Like, yo, it doesn't just, 200 people don't manifest out of nowhere, anywhere, full stop.
No, interesting thing. I don't know how we kind of gracefully transition to this conversation. A thing that I'm witnessing in comics right now is that free is not an incentive if people don't want a thing. So there is, you know, I watched this happen in Albany during like fallow periods where people were trying to make a thing happen and were very frustrated running up against all sorts of headaches. And what about if we made shows instead of, you know, maybe it's the cost that's prohibitive. Maybe if we made shows $5, people would come. Maybe if we made shows $1, people would come. Maybe if we made shows free, people would come. And it never really works, right? Because cost is keeping some people away from your show, no doubt. But
sure,
unless you're asking absurd amounts of money, it's not the deciding factor. There's something else going on where it maybe in your area there's just not enough appeal for that particular thing, but you just don't get the you just don't get the volume back from offering things for lower amounts of money. Would you guys?
Well, and that's where I thought you were going with the tipping point of price and like what's, and I mean we vaguely were, but like on an average show, like. Do I think a 20-year-old, we'll just say a 20-year-old, there were times when I would have said a 16-year-old, but in 2023, I'm going to say, do I think a 20-year-old can come up with $25 if they need to? Yeah, I think they could scrap up $25 if they need to find a way to get to a show. Yo, I bet, I know for me, if it's 1998 and I needed to scrap up $25, man, that would be tough. 10, 12, maybe even 15, if it was some shit I really want, I get that $15. Maybe I'm not eating lunch that week. You know what I mean? But I'm going to that show. I'm doing it. So I think that's the interesting question is, do you price people out with these things? Do people get pushed away by it? Because I also acknowledge that point you made. The answer isn't money all the time. Like if you offer things for free, you know, go, you want to test this out, go look at the weekly free magazines that sit in stands, you know,
yes, right.
It's proof. Just cause it's free doesn't mean everybody's going to pick one up and take it. So it's not always the barrier. Sometimes it can become one. Price point might be a factor. But there's a lot of other stuff, man. If you got a cool thing going, that's the other argument I make. When the like, I was talking to another friend about the Making a Scene New York Hardcore book, which is shout out to our buddy Steve Reddy, heavily prominently featured in. Lots of photos of Steve looking like a beast. Amazing book. Yo, Tom, I'm sure in the same place as me. Patrick, you could probably do this more than you realize. You look through that book. You can all of a sudden point out it's a who's who of New York hardcore in the mid 80s. Why? Because that was a lot of the people that were around at every goddamn show. Mm. Why? Because they were building up something cool that has essentially lasted beyond the days. It's become this monolith of a thing because they built a scene, and they built not just a scene, a cool scene, arguably the coolest, if not just one of the coolest, for sure. People can do that. You know what I mean? Like, you can do that. You can make that out of nothing, but you just got to try. It takes effort. It takes putting some cool things together. And it's not always successful. And, you know, you might feel like it was futile, but maybe it wasn't. I mean, Pat, you have a little firsthand experience of this. You don't talk often of your show booking days, but you booked shows for a few years in Albany at least, right?
Sure.
Do you feel like you were able to make a dent in doing cool stuff in Albany?
Yeah, for the time that I was there, I did cool stuff that people tend to remember fondly, but does that mean that it had any lasting impact in terms of Albany's strength as a market, quote unquote? No. You know what I mean?
Or it allowed it to fade, and that's okay. That happens. But like,
I think you got to do it for decades. And even then, if you take your foot off the gas, it can
in a spot like that. I mean, yeah, look, I'll speak to my local area. I got a friend, Swank, who's doing local shows. He's finally got a steady venue again, and it's awesome. And you can see stuff picking up again. But it comes and goes with the regularity, with having stuff go on. It doesn't just happen right away. And, you know, it ain't easy. Tom, you can speak to New York. There's some ups and down times in New York City.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's mostly based on venue availability, I think.
Right, right.
If you have a place to go, like we talked about it last week with like the church or whatever, like if you have like a centralized place that doesn't, that never goes away.
Right.
That's all you need. If you build it, people will come. No, it might take you a couple years to get it built up to be, but like, look at like Boise, all these places, Chattanooga, all these spots, like they found a spot, Fort Wayne, that like you make these places like a touring stop when you have a consistent venue to house shows at.
Yeah, that's exactly. There's two components. That's exactly right. There's two components. It's do you have an active body of people, handful of people doing things who want cool things to happen. Shout out to Philly for doing that, because they got that and the part two, which is steady venue. Pat, I mean,
yeah, I think like, it's more important.
What's more important?
You can hand the keys to the next person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've seen that in New York. You know what I mean?
You've seen that tons of places, sure.
Yeah. Like, it's like the people who book CBs and like the hardcore shows went from this guy to this person to this woman to this guy. Like, you know, you'd always have an in.
Wait a second. What you're saying is true and important. Can I bring up something that's going to get potentially maybe Tom, you in trouble? I don't think so, but.
Oh, cool. Can't wait.
Does it strike you as crazy how much of an institution and how allegedly important ABC No Rio was, and now seemingly completely memory hold as a place?
I had a long conversation about ABC the other day. Yeah, today, this morning, actually. I mean, when did it stop doing shows? About maybe 10 years ago, maybe less.
Right, because they were supposed to rebuild it, and they're still
supposed to rebuild it, and they didn't. Yeah, I walked by it a couple of years back and was like,
did you get buzzed into one of the sneaker shops? Because that was a real that was when the first time that happened to me, and I was like, oh, I remember like ABC being on Rivington and being like, this is a little sketch.
Yeah,
and this is why it existed, because nobody would bother anybody. Yeah. And but like they were like, oh, you want to walk into this like sneaker shop, and like they buzz you in like you're walking into like a fucking vault.
So Tom, here's a question: was ABC's important to you or no?
No.
Okay, interesting. Was it important to how important to New York was it?
I mean, it was pretty important, but I mean, I think. You know, it was very gatekeepery.
That's a fact.
You know, you had CBGBs, you had Wetlands, you had Coney Island High, you had Bond Street, you had all these different places that, like, you know, my bands played ABC No Rio once.
Same.
Because we were like two meathead, I guess. And then the one time we played, they said they had to hire extra security.
Yeah, false.
Like, that's not even true.
Like, yeah, that's false.
We played there with Kill the Man of Questions and somebody else. And like, we had to bring in extra people. I'm like, you're all volunteers. You didn't hire anybody.
Yeah. Stop.
You know what I mean? Like, you brought another vegan. Who gives a shit? Like, okay, cool, man. Like, no one's going to do anything here, but like, you know, it was just sort of like, it was a turnoff. And but like a lot of bands, you know, Burn or Rorschach or fucking Nice Boy. Like, there's a lot of bands that popped up from there that made an impact on New York hardcore at large.
So,
but to me, I wasn't punk enough.
Okay, but was it – just answer this question. Iconic venue, yes or no?
Yeah, as much for the dangerousness as anything.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, the roof might fall in.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, for sure. The floor cool. might collapse. But I'm not saying anything about anything, because I enjoyed the one show that I played there and I enjoyed the shows that I saw.
Same.
I'm not saying shit about shit, except I just – there's something almost scary to me about, and you know, for anybody that listened to our conversation with the St. Vitus guys, I didn't mean to depress them, but I just, this was stuck in my mind that nobody appreciates a fucking thing. Like once it's gone, it's gone. And people just don't think about a thing that was to that at one point in their lives, they couldn't imagine not having it. And then it's just sorry, I'm getting a little esoteric here.
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, CBGB's is more a shirt than a.
Yes. Yes. But it still exists in the mind, right? Like,
because of the shirt.
I mean, not just the shirt, but also if you travel overseas, you'll run into CBGBs because there's like, you know, if you go to Jakarta, for example, there's not the same, you don't have the same reach on a cease and desist. So you might get off a CBGB's replica diner in Southeast Asia. And
I mean, I'd go.
Or probably South America too, actually. But it's at least in the consciousness in some way. But something like ABC No Rio, which was, you know, it was one of the venues that was on the list of places to play when I was a kid that you kind
of course.
It like ABC, CBGB's, Gilman, a little bit later, the Che Cafe became like kind of like for the more screamo set had to be a place that you played. And
I mean, I think everyone played there, but I think it also all depended on who was holding the keys.
100%. Yes. Yes.
Cause totally. Gilman changed.
Yep. I mean, they all changed. They all changed radically. They don't admit it all the time, but they all changed.
No, but over the years, like, you know, oh, you couldn't play here because you had like major label like distribution.
Yeah. And then it's like,
maybe it's still like that, but sometimes it'd be like, it was only punk and like stuff. And then it was like, oh, now you have like beatdowns play here, bands play here. Oh, that's cool. I mean, it's cool.
Yeah.
But it all depends on who like the head booker is. And
a thing we don't talk about is, oh, the loud voice here that was being stinky about everything, moved to Olympia. Guess what?
Right.
those bands that couldn't play can suddenly play. And it's like, oh wait. So it wasn't about deeply held convictions. It was just about, you know, there was a guy with a name like Super Glue Sal who was a two punk for life who would just jump out of the internet woodwork and try to make life hard. And it's like, oh, when Super Glue Sal moved to you know, fucking Nashville, the mice will play.
No, and I mean, so that's the story of a room, you know, is that we can complain like CBGB's as a room purely, there was a lot of magic and interesting, and the sound for some reason it was a room that sounded good, and the board would get these great recordings. But like as a attendee of concerts at CBGB's, you like slip sliding all over the floor. It's got potholes in it. Like it's dangerous just to like try to go towards the back. The bathrooms are garbage, like the worst bar in America. Like it's all these bad things, but it was incredible too. ABC was a weird shamble of a room. There were shows in the basement that was like a dirt floor basement. The upstairs was like the worst art gallery you've ever been in.
Yes.
Like just plain walls. And then here you go. Here's the band who played. So bad. But you could see really good stuff. I saw so many good and so many bad shows at ABC and so many good and bad at CB's. ABC to me had these moments, these flashes of, oh my God, this is amazing. And it's amazing that it's happening in New York, where this place doesn't even make sense. I went to a room that was a lot like ABC in Columbus, Ohio, that was like some weird building, whatever. They had this space. They did a DIY collective, and it worked. This is 2000, so if somebody listening was involved, you can hit me with the name of the place.
That wasn't the Legion of Doom, was it?
I don't think so. Maybe
that was the house, though. That was a basement.
No. This was like a room. This was like a room. And it honestly, Tom, it looked like the upstairs at ABC. You know, it looked like the main space. But ABC, but in there, it's like, oh, this weird room, white walls. Okay, sure, that makes sense in Columbus, Ohio. It's fine. In New York, even though it was on Rivington, in a kind of rougher zone, even through the early 2000s, it was like, how does this exist? It's really weird. Who has the keys to this building? Oh, that's right. It changes all the time. There's different people who run it, kind of, but not really. And you can get a show on the calendar if you want. And they do vet it, but sometimes the vetting is harder than other times. It's fascinating. And that's this true. I think we've talked about the Che Cafe. Yo, San Diego was a must play when the Che was hot. Why was the Che hot? Because they had study shows, because they had 1, 2, 3 people booking stuff there all the time, working hard to make it work. Full stop.
Shout out Spencer.
Shout out to Kim. Shout out to a bunch of people who really made that place hum. And like, I would, as someone who lived in Orange County, LA was half as far as San Diego. I'd sometimes opt to go to the show, the tour date in San Diego, just because it was at Che and it was awesome. Just like rocked. Like
great venue.
It's amazing. So I don't know. I these things are all fascinating. We get the big shows in the big rooms, get the small shows in the small rooms, and sometimes you get an amazing big show in a small room. Make the most out of it and realize it's not as out of touch as you think. You know, I can tell lots of stories about booking shows for tens of people and then eventually booking shows for thousands of people. And then also after booking festivals, booking shows for tens of people again. And there's a joy and a pain found in both. So, don't get discouraged if you find yourself on the bigger end and you feel weird or like a fish out of water. And don't feel weird about being on the smaller end. That's cool as shit. Patrick, any other esoteric conversation to throw at us? Or are we done for the night?
Didn't you have a question, Bob?
I forgot it.
I don't know how.
I want to talk about the A7 plaque and go through every band on the A7 plaque, but
pull it up right now.
Do you have it? Pull it up. Let's do this rapid fire. I walked by and didn't see the plaque the other day.
I don't know if this is the new one because you know the scandal on this one, right? So like,
no, please tell us. I went to C&B Bakery right down the street from there. Had a Turkish bagel, which I think is called a simter, S-I-M-T-I-R. If I'm saying it wrong, someone hit me up. It was like toasted sesame and a very thin bagel-like thing. It was great. The place also looked like it had great breakfast sandwiches, but I had just eaten lunch. So let's go over this A7 plaque because I did not see it and I don't know the scandal.
Okay, so it's old now, but it's at the Tom, what's the new place called? Is it Niagara?
Niagara.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I mean, which has been around forever.
So, yes. Yeah, but it is so there is a plaque on the wall and
There's two.
Yes. So can you find
I'm looking at the other one.
Can you find the second one, Tom? I think I'm only looking at the original.
I'm looking at one that literally like if you've ever like played guitar, you're on it.
Yes. Okay. That's the one I'd like to go through, but hold on. Bob, so that you understand, they put a plaque on the wall, 1980 through 1984. It's just an A7 thing. Pioneers of American Hardcore and the birthplace.
Yes.
Because
Jesse Malin, who played in all those bands, owns the bar. Right.
Yeah. Specifically Reagan Youth, maybe the Nihilistics, but yeah. Go ahead.
So.
Wait, was it even worse? No.
So.
Go ahead. So, yeah.
Apparently, when this plaque went on the wall, there was people that took exception to it. People who were around, people who played in the bands that played that room, and they felt that
heart attacks.
They felt that the selections were safe or political or whatever, but didn't speak to the real shit. So, Tom, the one I'm looking at is like kind of a greatest hits. It's Agnostic Front, Bad Brains, Beastie Boys, Black Flag, Cause for Alarm, DOA, even worse, yeah, False Prophets, Heart Attack, Kraut, Murphy's Law, Reagan Youth, Scream, SSD Control, The Mad, The Misguided, The Mob, Warzone, and many, many more. But you are able to find the one that I weirdly my Google skills are not providing, but I know exists. Could you read that one to me, Tom?
All right, are you guys ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Revised A7 plaque as of 2014. A7, 1980 to 1984, Pioneers of American Hardcore and the Birthplace of New York Hardcore.
Okay.
AOD, Agnostic Front, Antidote, Anti-Warfare, Artificial Peace, Bad Brains, Bad Posture, Beastie Boys, Bedlam, Black Flag, Blood Clot, Butch Lust and the Hypocrites, CIA, Cause for Alarm, Cavity Creeps, Code of Honor, Crucial Truth, Crumbsuckers, Death Before Dishonor, DOA, Down Syndrome, Even Worse, False Prophets, Fatal Rage, Gilligan's Revenge, Heart Attack, Ism, Killer Instinct, Kraut, Major Conflict, Mental Abuse, Mental Decay, Mortal Sin, Murphy's Law, No Thanks, Rapid Deployment, Reagan Youth, Savage Circle, Scream, Shock, SSD Control, The Abused, The Attack, The Eliminators, The Headlickers, The High and the Mighty, The Influence, The Mad, The Misguided, The Mob, The Nihilistics, The Possessed, The Pricks, The Psychos, The Stimulators, The Undead, The Young and the Useless, Ultraviolence, Urban Waste, Virus, Warzone, Whipping Boy, Horror Lords, and many, many more.
So
wow. Okay. So wow.
Your dude got on there, Whipping Boy, Patty.
I know. I there was a couple that I was like, yeah, technically true, but coming from everywhere else, coming from Boston, coming from San Francisco, coming from everywhere else, it's I would have gone the other way.
I mean, there were probably so few bands that actually played there.
Well, I mean, no, that I think they were pulling from flyers. I mean, it's a good question of if there were, if it was strictly bands who played. So my notes are the CIA Gods, Guts, and Guns 7-inch is awesome. Maybe the best early Connecticut hardcore record. And the Fatal Rage LP is my favorite Jersey Shore hardcore record from prior to 1990. It's just awesome. Like straight up, like fast, great US hardcore. And I got lost because there were so many names, Tom, that I was like, why?
I'm betting they went back and looked at every show that happened there and
so compiled them. Would you guys, as a Patreon exclusive exercise, because I know the main line is not going to enjoy this exercise the way that we will. Do you want to What's your hit ratio here? Because I'm at having heard of 2/3, but only heard music from maybe less than half.
Okay, I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the revised plaque. I've heard a lot of these bands. So it's like, okay.
Rapid Deployment, Down Syndrome. I don't even know what these
Down Syndrome, yes. Not Rapid Deployment. Not the Pricks.
Headlickers, I think, is a comp only band.
I mean, a few of these are. I mean, so Cavity Creeps is pre Murphy's Law. I mean, Gilligan's Revenge pre Token Entry.
You're a big Butch Lust and the Hypocrites.
That's one
fan.
I don't know. I don't know them at all. Blood Clot.
Bedlam.
Bedlam's from New Jersey. Oh, Angry Choo Choo. Bedlam's awesome. Lost in Space LP is great.
Planet.
There's a lot of. So what you're seeing here is there's a lot of AOD, like the Bayar records, so like North Jersey scene. But you're seeing bands like Code of Honor is San Francisco. You know, they toured out there, which is kind of amazing. Killer Instinct, I'm not super familiar. Mental Abuse, North Jersey, classic. Mental Decay, North Jersey, not so great. There's some, like, yes, we'll do the exercise, Patrick. We need some time, but we'll do the exercise.
What's trying to listen to all this?
Or just go through the whole list. Okay, let's do it.
I can guarantee you we will not be able to find recordings of at least a third.
We can hear a lot. There will be certain ones that are hard. I'd say there's five on here that are hard to find recordings. But most of this, I'm pretty. The Blood Clot. We got to listen to the live at CB's tape
material the other day. So I think we could find this.
Yeah. What do you say, Pat?
The Frontline material.
Which actually
Frontline. It's Mackie.
Yeah, Mackie. Yep. But I didn't know that. Like, I had never listened to that. I honestly had never encountered it in any physical format ever in my life. And I went and listened.
Beastie Boys covered it.
I went and listened to it at YouTube. Worth it, everybody, by the way.
Tom, not only do I like Bedlam, I think I own a Bedlam poster. let's go.
This big up, Butch.
Butch Hickey's in the Rascals band. All right, yo, that's for Patreon. Everybody sign up. We love you. Have a good night.